Welcome to today's Central Asia Life, where we take a look at social changes and issues affecting daily life in the region. My name is Bermet Talant, and this talk is hosted by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. RFERL has more than 200 journalists from the region and provides news in all five local languages, as well as Russian and English. Domestic violence, sexual harassment, and gender inequality are pervasive in conservative Central Asian societies. In recent years, social media have helped to bring ill treatment of women to wider attention and have become a platform for victims to share their experiences. Videos of abuse regularly go viral, followed by public outcry and calls for justice. A man in Kyrgyzstan beat and tortured his wife on camera. A groom hit his bride at a wedding in Uzbekistan. A Kazakh celebrity posted photos of injuries after being battered by her husband. Sexist remarks by public figures, predominantly men, often draw strong backlash. It seems that not a week goes by without yet another appalling case that sets social media feeds on fire. But a generation of young women across the region is using TikTok and Instagram to change the status quo and educate other women about their rights. Some independent creators and activists challenge gender stereotypes and traditional roles in fun and creative ways. Others teach girls about a wide range of topics, from IT and science to menstruation and virginity, filling the gap in the absence of formal sex ed in schools. Joining us today, Aysana Ashim, a Kazakh journalist and founder of Batyr Jamal, an independent media outlet for young women with a focus on rights, safety, and self-value. And Merim Nurlanbekova is a Kyrgyz activist who founded Village Girl, an initiative to empower girls in rural areas of Kyrgyzstan. Great to have you both here today, girls. Before we continue, if you have a question or a comment, you can press request in your Twitter mobile app and we'll bring you in. Or you can send a direct message to @RFERL. Or a third way, you can reply to a tweet pinned in this space. Aysana, how are you today? Thanks for joining us.
Hello, I'm great. How are you?
Thank you. So tell us about Batyr Jamal. What does the title mean and why did you decide that Kazakhstan needed this kind of media outlet?
Batyr Jamal is, as you said, an independent media outlet about women's rights, security, and self-worth. It was launched on March 8, 2021, on the International Day of Women's Fight for Their Rights. And the name actually is very important because it's from a famous novel by Mirek Abdulatov, and actually it was the very first book in Kazakh language in the 20th century. So the name of his novel was Bakasi Jamal, meaning Unfortunate Jamal. And this book, shortly, it was about a girl who was very, she was educated, she was a poet, and she had a big dreams. But then she was forcefully married to this young man who started to abuse her and so on and so on. And she wanted to run away from the village to the city, but then she died from the cold and in a strong storm, and she lost her way and then died. And we understood that 100 years passed, but unfortunately the situation has not changed much. So we do not live in years, and most people can choose who to marry, but many problems remain. In Kazakhstan, women are still beaten, raped, and killed every day, and the law enforcement system does not protect us. For example, throwing a cigarette butt in the country is punished more severely than beating a woman. And there are a lot of other problems like harassment, like domestic violence, rapes, and gender pay gap. It's like 34%, and so on and so on. But in our narrative, there is no more Bakasi Jamal. It's Batyr. Batyr in Kazakh language means brave. And we want our women to be brave and have rights and fight for their rights and so on and so on. So, yeah, for more than 1 year, we produced almost 500 publications, and many of them became widely discussed in Kazakhstan, and we managed to build a very strong and big audience of 32,000 people. Yes. Basically.
You are a social first media outlet, meaning that you don't have a website and you run pages on Instagram and Telegram, right?
Exactly.
Why did you decide so?
Because we wanted our publications to spread as more as possible and in the most convenient way for our audience. And we understood that youngsters nowadays they spend more time on social media and they don't often go to websites. And as we do not sell like advertisement on our website, we don't have a website, we decided to go social media first. We exist on Instagram, TikTok, Telegram, Facebook, and Twitter. And now we see that that strategy was very successful. And now we have a big audience, I think, due to this strategy also. And of course, like the quality of publications and so on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I remember for a long time in Central Asia, so feminist publications, they were predominantly in the Russian language. And I see that Batyr Jamal also publishes in the Kazakh language. Do you adapt your content for Kazakh and Russian speaking audiences? Could you talk about this language aspect?
Yeah, thank you. It's a very interesting question, by the way. Actually, we had a strategy from the very beginning. We didn't even use word feminism. You know, we started from these topics that will be more accepted by general audience. We wrote a lot about domestic violence. I mean, almost every person is against like killing women and like beating women. I mean, at least they will say it in public. But then we educated in more and more and more, and we started to use word feminism. We started to explain what feminism is and like what kinds of feminism exists, and we started to include LGBT issues, women from some minorities and so on and so on. And now we see that this strategy was like, I think it is successful, because if we started from the very beginning, like feminism and LGBT, I think that people would be afraid, Kazakh language is very important for us, because we see that in Kazakh speaking audience, in rural areas, this gender violence and gender inequality is more widespread, unfortunately. So, yeah.
This is so interesting that you talked about kind of distancing from the word feminism.
Yeah.
Because I had a similar experience in Kyrgyzstan when one of the largest Kyrgyz language tabloids started a show about women's rights, and they were making it in collaboration with a local feminist organization, but they were trying not to mention that they were working with this organization, kind of not to draw negativity from the audience. So is there like a strong negative reaction to feminism, or why is that?
I think it is. Maybe it was, now it's like less, because people, they are afraid of what they don't understand. And they like, oh, feminism, oh, these feminist women, they're like very angry and they just hate men and they just want to kill all men and so on and so on. And that's why our main purpose is to educate people. I think it's still a strong reaction, but
Where are these stereotypes from? Is it something, I don't know. Where do the stereotypes come from of like angry feminist women?
I think it's very widespread even across the world that these women who don't shave, who don't shave and so on and so on. The cause is of course patriarchal system, the cause of it all. Because we don't have laws, because we like still have these problems,
One of my favorite sections on Batyr Jamal is your weekly compilations of TikTok videos and memes. Could you tell us about who's trending on Kazakh TikToks? Who are Gen Z feminist voices in Kazakhstan these days? What are they talking about?
I love it too. Thank you. Voices. Actually, I cannot name like one or two people. It's a bunch of girls, influentials, and I think that in a way we also influenced this, and they started to do more videos on that. You know, this innovation curve, when like some few people started to do something, and then more and more and more, and then it became mass trend. I can name, for example, our editor-in-chief, Diana Matveeva. She's very popular on TikTok, and she did these videos on feminism, on women's rights, and a lot of other people, maybe not a lot, yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll get back to you briefly. I want to bring in Miriam. Miriam is from Kyrgyzstan. Tell us about Village Girl and what inspired you to start this project.
Hi, everyone. Hello, Asana and Primet and everyone who are listening to us today. Yes, my name is Miriam. I am a co-founder and a initiator of the project Girls Empowerment, Village Girl Girls Empowerment Project. It is aimed at nurturing and promoting girl power culture in rural areas of Kyrgyzstan to support girls in pursuit of their dreams amidst all of the gender inequalities. The idea of the Village Girl Project has always been in my heart, as I am a village girl myself who have witnessed all the challenges girls face in rural areas of Kyrgyzstan, such as bride kidnapping, domestic violence, early marriages, reproductive health issues, as well as being socially and economically underprivileged among all other pressing problems girls have to deal with. For example, my mom was kidnapped in her 18s and was forced to get married right after school and give up her further education and basically all of her dreams. So I've always been passionate about these issues. However, the main turning point for the idea to be implemented was the kidnapping of Borolai Turdalekaze in 2018. She was kidnapped for a first forced marriage and murdered by her abductor in the police station. It was that moment when I realized that we girls in Kyrgyzstan should raise our voices and unite and do something to tackle this broken society. So in our team, right now we have 6 co-founders. We're all from different regions of Kyrgyzstan, conducting training and girls empowerment project sessions in different regions of Kyrgyzstan. We have reached so far 10 plus villages in 7 regions of Kyrgyzstan, 200 plus girls. We were also invited to Tajikistan to empower girls and conduct our leadership sessions there. And now we also try to utilize social media, just like Badr Jamal. I'm a big fan of Badr Jamal and everything that Aysan also does in the girls' empowerment and women empowerment sphere. So yes, this is a very dear project to my heart because first, it is very dear to me personally. Second, because I deeply care about this issue and want to do my best to put an end to such heartbreaking problems that girls have to deal with every day.
What was growing up as a girl in a village like? Was your family supportive of your aspirations and wanting to get education, or did you see any resistance from your relatives?
I can say that being a village girl has and involves lots of difficulties and challenges. You have to work twice more than anyone else to get things that you want to get. Lack of opportunities, weak education system in rural areas. Despite that, I was very probably courageous. My mom always inspired me to pursue education, and she would always tell me that education will save me or empower me. So I started learning language in my village school years, participate in different educational programs. It was very difficult, but the fire in me was stronger than those challenges, which were sort of served as obstacles. I have faced lots of gender discrimination. When I was choosing my university, people would tell me why you even need to go to that university. It's super expensive for you. Or why you need education, you will get married and you will never use it. Words like these kind of impacted me, but not in a bad way. They impacted me in a good way by firing me up even more, igniting fire in me and pursuing things that I wanted to do. So that's why it's so important to have that inner power, believe in ourselves, and I wanted to spread that and sort of infect that other girls as well.
So you mentioned several times that you empower girls and you provide leadership trainings. What exactly do you teach?
Yes, I, for example, in my last year at university, learned about this leadership concept called adaptive leadership, where we teach girls about leadership concept, not as a conventional way of how we perceive it usually in our societies, but it's a very non-conventional, non-traditional way of exercising leadership. For example, leadership is not a noun. Leadership is not linked to formal authority. It's not dependent on gender, social status, things like that. We teach girls that leadership is a verb, that anyone can exercise it, and that leadership comes within intrinsic motivation, things like that. So leadership is about really exercising it with an aim to make a change and mobilize your immediate society, whether it's your parents, your school, your teachers, your peers. So if you have a goal in your mind, a change you want to advocate for, you can raise up your voice in being courageous and, you know, exercise it. So leadership, that's our primary session. We also conduct trainings on reproductive health, on parental sort of sessions with parents, mostly with moms, because they tend to attend sessions usually rather than fathers. We conduct trainings on creative and critical thinking, on how to choose professions. And we also run live streams. So we also use social media to reach as many girls as possible, because all of our trainings are in person. So we're not able to reach as many girls as we would wish to. And we use social media to conduct live streams on IT, science. For example, last time we invited one of the world famous scientists from Kyrgyzstan, whose name is Asil Sartbayeva. And we tried to be also productive through online presence.
So you're working with a lot of teenage girls in rural areas. So what concerns them? What are their aspirations?
Love this question. One of the concerns they face is the support of their parents. I think whenever we ask girls about their goals and dreams, one thing which always is raised is their parents always decide for them, or they have this stereotypical perception of where should a girl be, or where should the girl go to, what should she pursue, things like that. And they always share that it's hard for them to communicate with their parents, and that's why we also conduct trainings on storytelling, basically how to communicate with parents and share what you desire as a girl and impact them and mobilize them so they can kind of choose girl's side rather than pushing and pressuring them and limiting them. But one of the aspirations, I think girls are so passionate. They have big dreams. And we, one of the primary sessions we have is a panel discussion with self-made girls. We just share real life stories of how girls achieved their dreams. And I think we need more role models like them, so the girls could believe in it, that they could also do a paved path for themselves.
Thank you. Just a quick reminder that if you'd like to ask a question or share your opinion on the subject that we're discussing today, you can indicate that you want to speak up by pressing the request button on your mobile app, or you can send a direct message to @RFERL with your question, or reply to a tweet pinned in this spaces. So Aysana and Miriam, you're both doing amazing work, and you primarily target women or moms, as Miriam said. How do we get more men involved in this conversation? Because it's such a big men's issue.
Can I say?
Yes, sure.
Yeah. Yes, thank you so much. I think that, first of all, by educating men and explaining to them that it's their problem too, because we women is like 50% of this society, the way we live, I mean, the quality of our lives directly influence your life too, because you, at least you have a mother, you have like daughters, you have sisters, you have girlfriends, friends, and so on and so on. And we women, we are like not just because we exist like in a career, in economy, in every aspect of life. And if we are miserable, then like half of society is miserable. And how can we be a great society, developed society with no air pollution, with great cities, with a great economy, with great politics, and so on and so on? It's just impossible. And when you will prioritize this problem, then we will do something. I mean, men too, and men also should be included, of course. And of course, and I also think that it's about our government, because our government don't see that the problem of gender equity is a political problem. It's not just a social problem, or just like, oh, this husband beats his wife, it's like he's their domestic issue. No, it's a political problem. And when we will, and when everybody will understand that, at least decision makers, then maybe something will change. Not maybe, of course, everything will change.
Do you think that Badr Jamal in the future could expand its coverage to include young men as well? Not only women.
We don't exclude them. I mean, they have a right also to read. We have some, but not so much. Around 8% of our audience is men, as Instagram says, our statistics. And I feel that there should be more men, but I cannot force them, yes, to read. And I think it's also through empathy, because when they see people, not just data, not just like 400 women being killed because of domestic violence, but when they see a story, when they see like a real human being suffering from it, maybe it creates, expands this empathy, and then empathy will probably lead to some changes. And also I want to highlight that not only articles, but we influenced around during this year. We started some crowdfunding campaigns. We helped a lot of people, and there are people who were sending these donations. They were also men, because I saw like who is sending. And I feel that a lot of men are like, they feel it, but they don't know what to do, and maybe they're a bit afraid to speak up.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there are resources for men, like, I don't know, Badr Jamal, or men who want to be more involved in the kind of women's rights movement?
I think that if they want to be involved, they just need to be involved. They just need to get involved. I think there is no need to create another media for them, or to like, because they are not excluded from the conversation. They are very included if they want mm-hmm. to speak up.
Mm-hmm. Miriam, so what do you think about getting men more involved in this conversation, and maybe having, you said that you also hold trainings with moms, right? But not with dads.
Yes, I support everything Aisana said about empathy, about involving, about that men are not initially excluded, right? If they want, they will always join the conversation. And our sessions with moms are not called sessions with moms, sessions with parents. And usually when we invite anyone from these two parents, moms show up. Again, we do not exclude men. So I want to share this quote about great man, which says, "Men of quality don't fear equality." So I guess I don't know how we can help sort of men to kind of embrace this equality. For me, men who fear inequality, men who fear equality or do not advocate for feminism or who hate sort of feminism even, I don't know how we can help them, honestly, or should we even help them? The thing is, men should understand that the world does not run around them, that they have really very, very fragile ego, and that they need to be empathetic, they need to know what humility is, so things like that. And there are two things how we can sort of restore or make this broken system a bit healthier for everyone. Is one is rule of law. Again, we do not need to be, create certain conditions for men. We just need to make sure that rule of law works well in every country, especially countries like Kyrgyzstan or Kazakhstan. If a person rapes, if a man rapes woman, he should get imprisoned. That's all. That's one. So rule of law, number one. And second, we do not exclude men. They are always have been part of conversations. They should be initiative, empathetic, join conversations, be there. I have lots of great man friends who are so just great. I love talking to them. I love discussing feminism with them. And I wish there were more men like them.
I think we have a question coming in from one of our listeners. We're going to take it now. I think it's the user ThoughtWorks. Is your mic on? Hello, you can now speak.
Hi, everybody. I'm new to this space. Thank you so much for allowing me to speak. I love this session. This is a subject that's very near and dear to my heart because I grew up in Iran and I grew up in a minority religion called the Baha'i Faith. And when I was a child, my sister was imprisoned for advocating for women's rights in Iran. And so I'm really happy to be here in this conversation. What I wanted to say is what the men of the world don't realize is that how much better life would be in every way. I give the example of the U.S. In the U.S., for example, when you imagine the situation that half the lawmaking body or basically half the all positions of authority in society were they to be women, everything would be done in a much better way than it is currently. Gender inequity is a huge issue. And even here in the US, where at least on paper, by law, we have equality of opportunity, not in reality, even here we have such disparate measures when it comes to actually looking at our society with regards to gender in terms of income. Men think that they have to give up something in order for women to be equals with them in every way, but it's actually quite the opposite, right? So life for all of us would be better if we remove this extremely sad and in many ways pathetic gap that exists between men and women, generally speaking, across the board. So I feel that when I think about how you even begin to change the perspective of men, I cannot come up with a solution that would even work in a few years, because I feel like so many of the attitudes and the mindset around the issues that we have are as a result of the way that we were raised. One of you ladies mentioned that men should be expressive of their emotions. Yes, here in the U.S., boys cry as children, they may get told that you're a boy, you're supposed to be a man, you're not supposed to cry. There should be no difference between our little boys and girls in the way that we impart to them expression of their sensitivities and their emotionality, because that is a human attribute. But we push our kids into gender roles as children, and then when those children grow up, you have the adults that you have now, and it's a bit more difficult at a, you know, later stage in life to change some of those fundamental outlooks and fundamental attitudes that become the reason of, say, men looking down on women or not considering them equal.
This is an important point. I believe it's rather universal, the way we raise boys and girls differently. This is definitely applicable and relatable to us in Central Asia. I would like to go back. Thank you very much for your input. I would like to go back to our speakers. And this is something we talked about earlier with you girls. And this is something I mentioned in the intro. Like, we see so many videos online of violence. We read sexist remarks, and there is always backlash. There is always a reaction online. And I don't know if you share my feeling, but I feel like a lot of this outrage is very short-lived and reactionary. So I wonder, how do we create a truly strong movement in Central Asia and actually bring a real change?
Yeah, I understand. You know, in our country, where lawmakers, police and judicial system, they are not supporting women when there is a public outcry for solving cases of violence, this publicity helps crimes to be taken into account by the authorities. And there were a lot of cases when we and the other media and even bloggers covered and spread information about some cases, and only after that police started to do something. And I would disagree, not with you, I mean, with this general opinion that, oh, it's just like people are just posting on social media and nothing happened. No, in our country, it actually works sometimes. And social media helps a lot to cover and to do something and to force police to do something. Also, I think the influence of these publications about these cases and so on, it's a culture. And so we are creating a culture of zero tolerance for violence and sexism and so on. And a society where a woman is respected and not perceived as an object, where she's free to dispose of her body and fate and without fear, yes, and unfair trial. And also it's a culture of confidence in girls and not to be afraid of anything. And I see that, I don't know, maybe it's our influence, maybe it's just a general education and so on and so on, but I see that in last year, women are more speaking up about, for example, some harassment in taxi or some harassment on the street or in their work, and a lot of cases. And I like it. Of course, I don't like what that these cases, but I see that still. I mean, at least this helps us. And of course, cancel culture sometimes it works.
tell us about who has been cancelled in Kazakhstan.
Yeah, I know cancel culture is very like controversial thing, but sometimes it's helpful, and when you don't have any tools. For example, recently we wrote about this alley of bars. We have a street of bars, and there are like 11 bars. And there is a lot of sexual harassment, some even rapes, and happening there. And we wrote about it, and this post gained more than 25,000 likes and a big reach.
And after our publications, the owners of these bars, they were like a bit bullied, and they started to do something like to hire more security, to do some posts about like what they will be doing to cover, to tackle this issue. And it's just one our publication, but we are writing about so much.
I don't know. We need actually maybe to create a list of these canceled people in Kazakhstan.
Thank you. That's really interesting. I have not heard about this. Kind of missed it. Miriam, what do you think about it? Do you have any examples from Kyrgyzstan when social media outcry, played a big role in a case and bringing justice?
You know, I can't really think of one super positive example which really sort of shattered the system and then, you know, lots of things changed. So let's take a recent case, heartbreaking case, with a girl. She was 13 years old. She was raped by four men. Three of them were police officers. Now, this created a huge outbreak, of course. A lot of women, mostly, they spoke up. They mobilized people to protest. They went to the police office station to protest, basically. Now it's been a few weeks. So what has happened with this case? Almost nothing. Did people resign after this huge case? Did officials say anything? For example, ministers or prime minister or vice prime minister? They didn't say anything, or when they said, their comment was really brutally incorrect and ethically just morally incorrect. So now that I think about it, I think about the social media, and Kyrgyz people use it a lot. We go to protest just on and on, but nothing is changing. I mean, the systematic change is not happening. Now I think deeply, right? What can we do?
And in the past, if we think about the case of Burulai and the girl who was murdered at the police station where she came to report her abductor, then there was Aizada Kanatbekova, I believe it was a couple of years ago, a girl who was kidnapped for forced marriage as well, and she was found dead with her abductor who committed suicide after killing her.
Mm-hmm.
So in all of those cases, it was also basically negligence of law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely agree with you that the system doesn't seem to learn any lessons.
Exactly. So I might sound, I don't know, maybe these are my big words, I don't know. But as long as men rule this country, and there are so many men ruling our government, I'm sorry, but nothing will change. We need more men to take decision-making positions. And only then they will react. We saw the reactions of men. We saw the reactions of the prime minister, of the vice prime minister. It was just inhuman. This is what I can say. So as much as we people, women and girls in Kyrgyzstan, try to utilize social media, create movements, run to protest, nothing is changing. I mean, it sounds so hopeless, but the system is not changing. So that's why we need to make sure that more women take positions, and then I can see the reactions. They are more empathetic and they do lots of things. So when we look at the parliament, only 30 women out of 120 are women. That's all. So imagine 30 women going against this 90 men and then debating. And you always debate. I see them always crying in the parliament, raising their voices, but no, nothing changes. It's really devastating to observe the status quo.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think we are running short on time. I would like to thank our guests, Aysana Ashim and Miriam Ulambekova, and our listeners for joining this Twitter space today, and to RFURL for hosting it. So don't miss the next episode, new episode next Thursday, and please help us improve this series by sending your suggestions or ideas for topics you'd like to hear about. You can DM me or @RFURL. Have a great day.